My daddy wants you to know a lot of the episodes have mostly clean language, but this episode has some words in it that aren't meant for all ages. So, if you have kids like me in your house, you may want to put some headphones on for this one. You've been warned. Done, done, done.
Gaga, go on.
Willkommen. I think I said that right, maybe. Let's try it again. Willkommen. Thank you for joining Daddy Unscripted Podcast for another episode. I am going to be sitting down today. Oh, I guess I should introduce myself, right? Yes. My name is Tim Wheaton. I am the host and the creator of Daddy Unscripted. Today we are going to be sitting down, or I will be sitting down with Jason Green, who is a father of two. He has a little boy and a little girl, much like myself, sort of. And I have known Jason for years. I was have been best friends with his younger brother for, I would have to say, it has been 24 years, maybe. That's a long time. That's crazy. And I've known Jason for years, and we have a lot in common, and have been close probably for at least 15 of those 24 years. That's a very safe number to put at that. So I asked Jason to come down and talk a little bit about his very unique childhood experience with his father, and his unique experience as well with being a father. So you'll hear all about that. I'm just going to leave it at that. That's kind of teasy, right? And we will get into a lot of topics later on as well. I will be recording a Fork in the Road episode with him, I'm sure, because of all those things that we have in common. I know you guys aren't used to hearing any bad language in these episodes because I don't tend to cuss a lot, but I will have people who do cuss a lot. And I am having one on that actually emailed me and said, "Is it okay to cuss?" And I said, "Yes, absolutely, you can cuss. I don't want people who sprinkle their conversations with F-bombs and bad language to have to work to not do it because of my podcast." So that's why I marked the entire podcast explicit, because I know I will have some episodes where people are cussing left and right. So I just wanted to let you know that this episode contains some language you may not want your little kids to hear. So make sure you're either listening to it where they cannot hear, or put on your headphones. And let's just get to the episode, because I'm just kind of rambling, and let's cut right to it, shall we? So here we go. Tim, like the Enchantor.
The Enchant, yes.
Yeah. Greetings. All right, so here with Jason Green. Welcome.
Thank you.
We are recording in my non-studio studio. And Jason, I will give you a little background on how we know each other. So it would be through Josh, Jason's younger brother, number two of four. Jason is the oldest. True. Who Josh went to my high school, though I didn't really know him. He was I believe he was going to be a freshman the year after I graduated. So I was a senior, and the very first experience I had of Josh was, we had our big senior chapel that was like, you know, we went to a private school, and that was the chapel that was just for seniors. Only seniors could talk.
Yeah.
So on and so forth. Josh went up, who none of us in the senior class knew who this kid was. And I can't remember what he said, but it was hilarious because it was just so completely random, and that was very clearly Josh. But
I forget, you're actually closer in age to me.
Oh, way closer.
Yeah.
How old are you?
46.
Okay, well, I'm 43.
Yeah, and Josh is 42. So actually, no.
I guess I'm...
Yeah. How does that work?
No, he couldn't have just been a freshman then.
No.
That's right. I'm way off. Yeah. He was...
He must have been a sophomore.
Yeah. He was 2 years behind me. Yeah. That's right. So then I didn't see him again or whatever, probably, until I was maybe 20... Or no... maybe 19, and really? Started working at Coast Hills at a church, mm-hmm. Where Josh was a member of. He wasn't doing anything other than just being a high schooler, I think.
Josh went to church?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Oh, it's news.
Did you not know any of this?
No, I know.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. I became friends with him and Josh, who you listeners will experience later on in the show's episodes. But Josh and I became...
Which Josh are we talking about?
Your Josh.
Okay.
Josh Green, I will say.
Yeah.
And myself and Josh Lanting became basically inseparable trio for years. And I think...
Didn't you have a band?
We did. We were in a band together.
Yeah.
But you were...
I was old.
You were already gone.
Yeah. At that time, I would have been living probably in Washington, I would imagine.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to Washington State.
Yes.
And was living up there for several years. So that would have been most of that during like most of that time.
But yeah.
I would come down and like see you guys and,
right.
And you know, be around you.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I didn't really want to be around you, but I was around you. Couldn't really avoid you.
I'm a plague.
Yeah, something like that.
Then we became friends sort of during that time. I mean, we would see you and we went up to Wes's parties up in Lompoc and you were there. And,
yeah, which were always fun.
Yes.
And there was never any illicit substances or activities going on there at all. It was always just good, wholesome fun.
No, you know, these
charades.
Were kids' parties with...
Yeah.
Face painting.
Yeah, bounce houses.
Bounce houses.
Good
yeah,
times.
Yeah.
Good times.
There was an epic day of kite flying, though, that was completely normal.
Yeah, that was.
Then you guys all went out to Minnesota.
Yes.
Which I...
With Josh Lanting.
Yes.
And
both
Josh
Josh's.
Green.
And I was very close to going, but instead I lived in Europe.
Yeah,
so it was,
it's Minnesota, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, or Europe. I mean, it's a tough choice.
It's pretty much the same.
I think you made the wrong choice.
Yeah, probably.
Where in Europe?
I was living in northern England, northwest.
Yeah, see, that sounds actually a lot like Minnesota.
Obviously, yeah.
Cold and miserable.
It was actually because it was December when I moved out there, or January, early
That's
January.
Summer
maybe.
There, right?
Oh, yeah. It was actually, I remember actually and factually snowing one day when I walked into town from the university to get our groceries. And it was about a 30 to 45 minute walk through driving snow, carrying like two bags of groceries. And I had a hiker's backpack full of groceries as well. It was miserable.
Did you put like warm like foil wrapped potatoes in your boots to keep you warm? Or
no,
like
my feet basically were potatoes after that was over.
Yeah, that sounds miserable.
Yeah. It was a great time though, but I did not have the Minnesota experience that you guys all had. And then
which was great.
I think then
until winter.
It's just very random that I would see you here and there. And then we just suddenly kind of became closer. I really don't know how.
Yeah. I don't know. We've hung out quite a bit though.
Yeah.
For a while.
Do we
play like games together and stuff? I mean, was there any of that? Because I know I used to hang out with a lot of other friends of Josh's and we would play like the Star Wars card game and stuff like that. You were never on that team.
I was not in that group. And
yeah.
I almost was at one point, but
yeah.
I remember You're going cool, over though. To your parents' house at one point and everybody was... They were trying to teach me how to, you know, you roll this for your dexterity or whatever and that kind of stuff.
Let's not talk about that.
I missed it. Yeah.
That's super lame.
I missed out on that. I was doing something else.
But actually it's funny because like one of the memories that I have of hanging out with you, we went and saw a zombie movie together and it was Dawn of the Dead, remake?
Yeah, it was the remake of Dawn of the Dead, I remember.
It was phenomenal. I had so much fun.
I remember because that very first scene where the little girl tries to...
Yes.
Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen it.
But if you haven't seen that movie, you should go see it right now.
Where the little girl comes in the room. All you Walking Dead lovers should really go back and see that movie. Because truly, I had been, not raised, but... I was watching all those older zombie movies when I was a kid, and that's why I wanted to see that movie so bad. And that was the first time I remember seeing running zombies.
Oh, so rad.
And so like those car crashes and the everything was crazy.
Where they come out of the, she comes out of the bathroom. She crawls out of the bathroom window and she lands on her lawn and it does this like slow one shot pan across the whole neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it's just chaos.
Yeah.
So rad. It's such a great movie. You know what? I gotta watch that.
we're gonna pause and watch that movie. And we'll come back.
Can we do that
in
right
a couple
now?
Hours? So anyhow, that's kind of the introduction of Jason. We have been good friends for years, which kind
of I've known you for a long time.
Yeah,
yeah.
So as we go into that, so we had a little conversation off mic earlier that we were as I was kind of prepping you for this, not so much a fluffing. But a prepping.
No, yeah, there was no fluffing. No. I'm disappointed, but.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We are going to venture back into your, to get to where you are as a father, which I won't say anything about. We'll leave that as a little tease.
Yeah.
But we are going to go back to your history of being fathered. So wherever that best starts for you.
So, So going way back, right? So my childhood was pretty interesting, I guess, because and I was thinking about this on the drive over, and I was listening to Gordon Lightfoot because that's the music that you listen to if you're trying to get into a dad frame of mind.
Yes,
and I was just thinking about like what's up with my what was going on in my childhood and like how did that shape me and how did that change. And we'll get to the change later. But so I was born in the Naval Hospital in Coronado in San Diego. And I lived there for literally 2 weeks and my parents uprooted and we moved to Wisconsin and we lived there for 6 months and then we uprooted and we moved to like somewhere in the deep South, I think like Alabama or Mississippi, Montgomery, Georgia. I don't know. And my childhood until I was 9 years old, we basically moved pretty much constantly. My dad was – well, first he was in the Navy. That's why I was born in the Naval Hospital. And then he got out of the Navy basically the day I was born. And then he worked for Oscar Mayer and Sears. And my – the story that I always tell, and this is kind of my impression of it, was that he was kind of a fixer for those companies. A guy that would go to divisions or departments that were underperforming and kind of turn them around. Mm. And so he'd be there short term and then he'd move and go on to the next one. So we moved a lot when I was a kid. And it's, you know, the interesting thing about that is that I kind of have this wanderlust, but I repress it because of, you know, what happened when I was 9 years old, my dad was killed in a plane crash. And so that was a fairly drastic change to my life. And at the time, so we lived in San Diego, Wisconsin, somewhere in the deep South. Let's say Alabama, Arkansas, New York, Pennsylvania. And then we moved back to California when I was, I want to say Halley's Comet. Was that 77? I don't know if somebody's listening and you know, just look up the last time that Halley's Comet passed because
you will be the one person who knows.
Yeah, that was the year that I moved back to California. It was after the centennial, so 1976. It was after the bicentennial. And so it was 1977 was Halley's Comet. There we go.
There you just go. Did
the math. And so we were living in California from 77. My dad was killed in a plane crash in 79. The plane crash was DC-10 out of O'Hare. At the time, the largest air disaster in U.S. history, 250-some-odd people killed. And, people are curious about this thing, you think? So it was the 1970 – God, maybe it was 78, actually, that it happened. Mm-hmm. A bolt broke, sheared off on one of the motors, and the motor dropped. And then the plane was supposed to glide, but instead it flipped over and crashed. So that's bad.
So it was – where was it when it
Chicago? So it was just on takeoff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So and it's in, so crazy story. Can I digress?
Oh, digress.
So away. Crazy story. So through a weird sort of turn of events, my job, a year and a half ago was researching into nonprofits and schools kind of falls into that a lot. Mm-hmm. And I came, I was doing a search for schools in a certain area, and I saw just flashing on Google as I'm like kind of burning through, and I see this, the flight number, and I don't, it was 972 or something like that. So what happened was there was a woman who was a, I think she was a principal at this school, and her parents, both of her parents were on that plane.
Hmm.
And her students found out, and they decided that they wanted to build a memorial. There'd never been a memorial. I mean, it was just, this was a Delta Airlines flight, and Delta Airlines was like, well, we don't really want to publicize this right. and build a memorial.
Yeah.
Understandable. But the students found out, and they wanted to build a memorial. So they did. They got all this money together, and they built this memorial. And so there is now in Chicago, just outside of Chicago, outside of O'Hare, where the plane crashed, they've built this beautiful garden, and they built this bricks, this like little brick wall, and each brick has the name of one of the people on
wow.
it. So I see this lady's, you know, this pop up randomly in this Google search. I'm like, oh, well, that's weird. That's crazy. I wonder. And you know, so I sent her an email, and sure enough, you know, she's got this, she has all this information, and she has the full list of all the people that were on the flight. She wow. sends me pictures of my brick with my dad's name on
oh,
it and stuff.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Super cool. You know, so that was pretty cool. And so this interesting thing is that I don't know if those are your formative years, but from birth until 8 or 9 years old, we moved like every 6 months or a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have this sort of wanderlust, you know, and I mean, you've known me for a while, and you've yeah. seen me kind of bounce around.
Yeah.
And you know, so, it, you know, I was living in Southern California, and then somebody says, hey, we should move to Washington, go to school. I was like, cool. So I moved to Washington, mm-hmm. and then I'm in Washington, and somebody says, hey, it'd be great if we went to Minnesota. And I was like, awesome. And I'm off to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Then I moved back, and I'm living at the Vineyard with
Wes. Right. Yes.
And, you know, this, I meet this guy, and he's like, hey, I'm opening this restaurant. It's in Springfield, Missouri. And I'm like, cool, Missouri. And off I go to Missouri. So that sort of wanderlust persisted through my adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really gave it a lot of thought. I just was like, I'm
like,
spontaneous.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to move and, yeah. you know, whatever. But it kind of connects back, I think, to, you know, and I'm sure if somebody psychoanalyzed me, they'd, you know, well, aside from all the other disastrous things they discover, but you know, I think that's what they think. You know, that's kind of what that was. So the interesting thing is that my mom remarried, and you know, the guy that she remarried is awesome. He's a good stepdad, and I don't think of him as my stepdad because he's been my stepdad for a really long time. I
right.
mean, you know, I'm 46 now, so 37 years, 36, I don't know, whatever, however many years it was. And he's not like that,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so do you, so the thing that's interesting to me is that I don't think that it's one way or the other is the right way to live your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that it's like, oh, you know, bouncing around every 6 months is bad, or, oh, putting down deep roots and staying in one place and leaving
mm-hmm.
is bad.
Right.
One is certainly more typical than the other.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife, Heidi, she's very much got deep roots.
Mm-hmm.
Her parents have lived in the same house since like 1964.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. they still live there, yeah. you know? And so, you know, Heidi gets super attached to things and places. And I don't have that attachment at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you came to me, if you're my wife and God help us all. But
this is getting weird already.
But if you're my wife and you come to me and you're like, hey, I got a job offer. We're going to Alaska. I'm like, cool.
Let's
pack.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But, you know, when I say, hey, you know, gosh, it's so expensive living in South Orange County. Maybe we should look at, you know, moving to someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
She breaks out in a cold sweat.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I think that, you know, so it's interesting. I've lived kind of – my childhood had two very distinct phases to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely still have that wanderlust because all the time I'm like – can I say fuck?
Yes.
All the time I'm like, fuck this. I hate living in South Orange County. Let's move to, you know, Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah.
But I then I said this earlier, I repress that, you
right.
know, and not because I think that it's the wrong thing to do, but mm-hmm. simply because it makes my life a hell of a lot easier to
happy wife, happy life.
It's not even, well, yeah, and that's definitely a big piece of it.
Right.
But it makes my life a lot easier to be in one place and have, yeah. you know, a little bit deeper roots. And now, you know, I have kids.
Right.
Which is why we're talking, right? I mean, I'm a dad.
Pretty much.
And, yeah. and now I'm like, and now we have kids and now I think about it, you know, like, well, what would happen if I, you know, if I just uprooted my family.
Started doing what you were.
Yeah, months, yeah, yeah. You know, and like, what would that do to my kids? And the funny thing is my kids are, you know, but we're going to let the cat out of the bag. I have
Go
twins.
Ahead.
I have twins. My yes. kids are 9. That's how old I was when, you know, my dad died, mm-hmm. I think. Maybe I might have been 8, but whatever. But so it's almost, it would be flipped, you know. Mm-hmm. Like if I were to convince my wife, like, hey, we're packing it up and we're bailing. It would be the exact opposite. And how would that, you know, how would their life look if all of a sudden we started moving a lot?
Right. So you are 8 or 9 years old. You're living in California.
Yep.
Your dad is in this horrific accident that is so, I mean, plane crashes are, can we still call them rare?
Oh, they're super rare.
So they're still rare. But back then... I mean, you know, a lot have happened since then to large aircraft with lots of passengers. I mean, yeah. it's not common, but it has happened, right. I would say, at least once every 3 years, at yeah. least.
I mean, we just had one.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens more to non-domestic airlines
right.
these days.
Right. It's not yeah. things like that where a bolt is
no.
something. And
yeah.
But so this is a kind of a, I mean, it's the biggest one of its
at the time.
Yeah. And so I know you were really young, but how is that just completely aside from the obvious kind of, how does your mom hold your family together?
Yeah.
And hold it together for herself too.
Beatings. No, I'm kidding. Mom, don't listen to this. No, I mean, you know, it was interesting. I mean, there was never any discussion, mm-hmm. you know. So the day that it happened, I come home from school and my whole family's at the house, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm like just old enough, just, and I mean, Josh is like 5.
Right.
4 or 5.
Right.
Like he's an idiot. Well, he's still an idiot, but I, you know, I mean, it's like I come home and I'm like, and I think I even like made a wisecrack, like, bro, did somebody die? You know, which that's just so that's my time.
Yeah,
my
exactly.
entire life, you know. But so my whole family's there. And the crazy thing is that, like, you know, I mean, something like that brings the whole family together, right?
I mean,
it's a tragedy and everybody's yeah. like, oh, and, you know, and then 3 days later, they all leave.
They're all gone.
Which yeah. is fine. I mean, you know, it's not like I expect, you know, grandma to stay with us forever,
right.
you know, or, you know, whoever. So you go through this like weird transition where, and I remember, my uncle takes my brother and I for a walk. And at the time we were living in Garden Grove and there was this Twin Lakes Freedom Park across the street from our house, and which was really just a sewer runoff and some grass.
Yeah.
And so we're walking around and my uncle's giving me the, you're the man of the house now speech. And by the way, dads, don't give that speech to your son. Don't do that. That's a shitty thing to do to your kid.
You know? What does that mean?
Yeah. But I'm 9 years old and I'm like, wait, what? I'm the man of the house? I'm 9.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I was feeding spiders to anthills today. I'm not the man of the house, you jackass.
Well, I guess I better get a job.
Yeah. You know, it's like, well, damn, I better start smoking and find myself a wife. So it was, you know, I just remember like walking around the park and, you know, having this conversation with my uncle and it's like, whoa, okay. So I'm going to have some guidance from my uncle. And then 3 days later, like Uncle Danny's not here anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Like I said, I mean, whatever, it is what it is. But there was never any like, okay, now we have a whole new set of rules.
Right.
It was basically, you know, this is our life now. Mm-hmm. And it just keeps churning on. And I took a couple days off from school and, you know, and then it was back to school. And apparently they made like a big announcement at school. And mm-hmm. by the way, schools don't do that either.
Yeah.
Because then every kid in school is like, oh, wait, it's the kid whose dad died in the airplane crash.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, awesome. Thanks.
Yeah.
You know,
it's that scene in a movie or a TV show that you always are like, that is so not true. But you are like walking through the hallways and everybody's staring at you and whispering behind their hands.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. I mean, yeah. Completely, you yeah. know, and I mean, like, and some kids are great.
Yeah.
And, you know, they come up to you and they're just, you know, they're awesome and they just want to be your friend. And,
right.
You know, they're like taking your mind off it and let's go play.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then some kids are total assholes about
right.
it, you know, and they're like, you don't have a dad anymore. And
yeah.
I'm going to kick your ass. And, you know, it just was what it was,
mm-hmm.
you know, and life just continues to move forward. And, you know, so this is interesting. I don't really remember my mom working during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, oh, you know, mom's going to go to work. And so in that sense, I think we were different
mm-hmm.
than households without a dad.
Right.
You know, I mean, my mom was she was a housewife and she just continued to play that role.
Right.
And it's not, you know, she didn't go work in a bank or something like that. So there was something somewhere happening because mm-hmm. we had a house.
Right.
And I don't know if we owned it. I think we owned it.
Yeah.
So somehow those mortgages.
Let's get your mom on the phone.
Yeah. Let's call her up. Bonnie. So somehow those mortgage payments were still being made and, you know, and things were still moving forward. And then, you know, and then of course, years later, there was a settlement and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then there was money and houses were paid for. And,
right.
you know, so in a sense, it was just. You know, so much different from the normal, like single parent household.
Right.
We never had that experience.
Like, yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, you watch these basketball players and, you know, I mean, they grew up and, you know, I mean, like, Ricky Rubio's mom just died and Carl Anthony Towns, like, you know, there's no love like a mother's love, you know, like,
right.
I feel so bad for my brother right now.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, We just didn't have a dad, but
yeah.
but everything kind of stayed the same,
mm-hmm.
you know, so we didn't, there was no struggle for us.
The, you know, I've talked a little bit about your brother, Josh, and my connection to him. So there was one time that I actually talked with him about your dad
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't really much of a conversation at all. We were working at junior high camp and I can't remember what happened. I think we were sitting in something and this guy was talking and he just reminded me of my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And this would have been, gosh, maybe 3 years after my dad had died. So it was very fresh for me.
Yeah.
And I just lost it and was just bawling and was inconsolable and went back to where we were staying and the cabin or whatever we were in and was just in there just completely lost it. I mean, embarrassingly so. And your brother and another friend of ours, Mark, who you've met, Mark Chapman.
Yeah, I know Mark.
So they both came down and kind of left the assembly that we were in and were kind of not really knowing what to say and just kind of sitting in there or whatever. And I think I said to your brother, I kind of explained what was going on. And I said, I've never, ever heard you talk about your dad ever.
Uh-huh.
Do you think about it at all? Have you ever thought about it? It's crazy that we've never talked about it. You never say a single thing about it or anything. And he just, I want to say he was kind of non-committal on it and probably didn't want to even kind of get into it,
yeah.
knowing who Josh is.
Yeah.
And was like, no, I think about it, but I just don't want to talk about it. And
yeah.
I was like, you know, kind of at my blubbery core at that point, it was, I think, probably looking more for a connection at
right.
that point. And I was like, wow, I just don't get how you kind of do that. But he was also...
He was five.
Yeah, he was five at the time. I mean, it was completely different.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really thinking about that part of it, but yeah, that was the only time that I've ever discussed anything with him. And I don't know how much recollection he has of your dad. I'm sure there must be something.
I mean, even for me, there's not much.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, obviously, especially now, cause it was a long time ago.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, for Josh, even then, you know, I mean, even 10 years later, he probably had, you know, very little.
Yeah.
And also because, you know, I mean, my dad traveled a lot, I think. I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. It's
right.
It's like, you know, we were so really fuzzy, young. Yeah. I mean, we were so young and memory's so unreliable anyways.
Yeah.
You know.
Especially as you get older.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, just in general, you know, I mean, you don't really remember, you know, things accurately.
Yeah.
I mean, I have impressions, you know, of, you know, I mean, obviously my dad was traveling when he died.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it's like, I don't really remember, like, you know, doing a lot with him and stuff. Cause mm-hmm. It was just, I mean, he was even younger than I was, and I don't really have a lot of recollections.
How old was he when he died?
God, it couldn't have been more than 5.
No. How old was
your dad? Oh, my dad, 29, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was young.
So he.
That was weird too, like being older than my dad was when he died.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I remember thinking about that with my other friend, Jason, who I don't know if you ever knew him, Jason Radarmal, who.
Kind of.
One of my best friends in high school who just basically had some kind of heart defect that nobody knew about and was standing talking with some people and just collapsed and was dead. Basically.
I remember that. That wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. And he was 39, I think, when it happened. And I was a little over a year younger than him. And I remember, like, for a couple of years thinking, I'm hitting 40, and he never hit 40.
Yeah.
And he never hit 41, just like really thinking about that. And I mean, he led a completely different life from me. He had his kids much younger than I did and whatnot. But so then your family is moving along as it's moving along, and then your mom remarries.
Yeah. So there was a lady who lived across the street. Her name was Rhonda. Rhonda used to throw some parties.
Mm. And this is
late 70s.
Oh, yeah.
This is late 70s.
Okay.
And, you know, Rhonda was throwing a party. My mom goes to the party. This is totally just my recollection. I could be completely wrong. And maybe they met in church.
Right. It's like a Tupperware meeting in church.
Yeah. But there's this dude there, this like tall, you know, this tall, lanky, good looking dude with long hair, starting to lose it maybe a little bit in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they hit it off and, you know, and then a few years later they got married. I think I got married in 81 and, you know, and then my brother Mike was born in 82 and Brandon was born in 85, 86.
Probably. 86.
Sorry, Brandon.
He's got to be at least 4 years younger than Mick, right?
Yeah. Sorry, so, I could tell you exactly. Actually, Brandon was born in 1986 because I was 16 when he was born.
There you go.
Yeah. So big spread.
Yeah.
Kind of every 4 years.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. And I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, Mike is, you know, super cool guy,
mm-hmm.
but you know, the relationship's different. I was, you know, 10 or 11 years old.
Right.
When they got married and, you know, I mean, our relationship is good. He's a good guy. Love him. But it's not like your typical father son relationship,
right?
You know,
there is somewhat of a what you would call it, a gap or a breach, or
and he's only like 16, maybe 17 years older than I am, too.
Right?
Like I have friends as old as my dad.
Yeah,
you know?
That's funny. and I mean, from my many experiences with him, he was always, you know, he's a very typical, he's a dad. Like,
that's
just who he is. He makes dad jokes. He was always very friendly, but not, you know, not in a trying too hard kind of way or anything like that. And, you know, was never I never saw him be too overbearing or anything like that, but.
No, and look at it from his side, right? Like he meets this chick, she's kind of hot, you know, and they get married and all of a sudden he's got like an 11-year-old son and a 7-year-old son.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I wouldn't take that on.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, you know, that's got to be kind of, that had to have been pretty weird for him. And so interesting sort of side note on that, you know, he offered to adopt Josh and I.
Mm.
And we both declined.
So did he do that right away after the marriage?
Pretty quick. Okay. Yeah, pretty quick. But, you know, and I don't really, and I'd have to talk to Josh and see if he remembers this. I don't know. I don't think Josh and I ever even had a discussion about it. Mm-hmm. Like, do you want to be adopted by it?
Right.
But it was just kind of like, and I think for me, it was really just like, do you want to be a Gilberstadt? And I was like,
I like my last like name better. Yeah,
you know? Yeah. So I was like, yeah, no offense, you know, Dad, but your last name, like if it had been like Gilbert, maybe I'd have gone for it. Yeah. But, you know, that's just that's too many syllables. I was thinking about my signature.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a silent D before yeah, what is
what
that?
The hell?
Yeah.
You know, I can't get down with that.
Yeah. I like it. So do you remember, did he ever have any kind of, I always feel like I'm super ignorant and the obvious son who only had one dad when I think of these things, but did he ever kind of have the discussion with you? Was there ever a talk like the normal version of what happened in the movie Step Brothers? You know, not a comedic sense of it, but
I got to see that movie because I don't know what you're.
You've never seen Step Brothers?
No.
Do you like to laugh?
I enjoy it quite a bit.
Do you like Will Ferrell?
I enjoy him quite a bit too.
To see that movie. So, did you ever have the like? So I'm gonna be your dad now. You don't have to call me dad.
Ah,
blah blah blah.
Yeah. So, that's pretty funny actually because yes, we did have that conversation. What do you want to call me?
Uh-huh.
And I was like. And it was funny because for a while, I think I used to call him like dad dude.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like,
dad dude.
I was like 12 and, you know, just thought that would be a cool thing to call your dad.
Yeah.
Dad dude. But you know, now I just call him dad. And I think I probably have for a really long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, we totally had that discussion.
Yeah.
You know, what do you want to call me? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like just, I'm a kid. I don't know. Tell me what to call you.
Yeah.
And I'll call you whatever you want. You know, okay. So here's a cool story. So I used to be a paper boy. That was my first job. Orange County Register.
Nice.
Represent.
On a bike or
on
a car?
A bike.
On a bike. On a bike.
Yeah. They wouldn't let me drive a car when I was 13.
I didn't know how.
They should have, but.
I mean, it was your brother didn't have a job until he was what?
Josh?
Yeah. So when you say my first job was as a paper boy,
I had a paper route in Garden Grove. Mm. And by the way, and here's why we don't have paper boys anymore. Right. So I would, you know, wake up at 3 a.m. on a Sunday and I'd roll over to this douchebag Kevin's house and I'd wrap up all my papers, you know, and I'd take each section and put them all together and put a rubber band around them or put them in a paper. The best was the days it was raining because then they'd bag them
plastic
for you.
Bag, yeah.
It's awesome.
Oh, so they were already all
they would
together.
Already be bagged.
Oh,
it was
nice.
The best thing ever. But if it wasn't raining, then you had to do it yourself.
Right.
And so then I'd load up my canvas bags in my bike and I'd roll around to all the houses and I'd deliver everybody's papers, right? But the sketchy thing was collections. They had the paper boys do the collections. There was no billing. So I'd walk – like I used to deliver to an apartment building and I'd be like banging on people's doors and like I'm 13 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, mister, your $7 for your paper, for your register's due.
Yeah.
Like how I didn't get molested, I guess it's just sheer dumb luck.
Are you the one who keeps throwing it in my garden?
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, but it was cool because we'd get tipped. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, if you put it on the doorway, I'll give you an extra $2. Huh. You know, it's like, dude, I put your paper on the doorway freaking 30 times this month. You gave me $2?
You owe me 60.
You owe me 60 bucks, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was super sketchy, though, that we would do that. Yeah, and then, like, we would all get rounded up, like, once a month. All the paper boys in the area, we'd get rounded up. And then we'd go at night, like, door to door, like, knocking on people's doors, seeing if they wanted to subscribe to the paper.
Oh, man.
I mean, the register.
That's the worst.
Child labor.
Yeah.
That's like,
seriously.
Child labor. And we got paid jack. I got paid diddly squat, you know? Probably made 15 bucks a week.
I wonder when that finally came to light and got shut down.
I don't know. Some kid got snatched and, you know, something, you know? And that was like, well, the register's like, whoa, fat cat's over there. Well, I guess we can't do that anymore. Child labor.
We've all been waiting for that, guys. And it's finally, that shoe finally dropped. So.
Yeah, pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Pretty brutal. So what were we talking about?
We were talking about your first job.
Oh, yeah. So that was my, so the interesting story there was one day. So when somebody would be out like on vacation or something, mm-hmm. then one of the other paper boys would like pick up their route.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one day I was working this other kid's route. And so I had like twice as much to do. And they were always nightmare days because you didn't know the other kid's route and you wanted to make sure you got it, whatever.
Right.
So I show up to go pick up my papers and all my papers are completely folded, rubber bands around them, like completely ready to go. And, you know, 13-year-old optimistic kid, I just have this like immediate, assumption that my stepdad woke up at 2 a.m. and rolled down there and folded up all my papers for me, you know, to make my life easier. Yeah. And it was like a turning point for me, like mentally. And I think that I probably just fooled myself and I'm sure like he didn't do it. It was probably like the register was like, hey, we got this new system to wrap up the papers. Right. Check it out.
And this kid's subbing in. So let's help him out.
And so I go and I do the route and then I come home and I'm like, oh man, thanks for doing that. I love you. Uh-huh. That was like the first time I ever said I love you to my stepdad, you know? And so that was like the turning point, you know?
And he's like, Barney, I have no idea what he thinks I did, but I'm accepting it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, so that's pretty funny.
That was a horrible mic voice, by the way. Sorry, Mike. So, okay, let's move ahead towards today.
Yeah.
Well, no, towards 9 years ago. Mm. So you have been married to Heidi how long before you guys have the kids? Or,
well, we just had our 17-year anniversary.
Okay.
So we got married in 99. The kids were
about
born
8 years.
The kids were born in 2006.
Okay. So you were how old when you got married then? Oh, 29. So you were 29.
Yeah.
And that was quick math,
by
the way.
That was amazing.
But being born on 1970 makes everything a little bit easier.
Right? Yeah.
So thanks for that.
You're welcome.
So you are purposely waiting through all those years?
Oh, yeah. You ever see the movie Idiocracy?
No.
What?
I know. You have to watch Step Brothers. I have to watch Idiocracy.
So Idiocracy, there's like this lame, yuppie couple. And they're doing these two vignettes. So the one is the yuppie couple and they're like, well, we really want to have kids, but we're just waiting for the stock market to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to like, they flash to like the trailer park and he's like, I'm going to fuck all y'all. And his family tree is like, boop, 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 boop. And it's just expanding. And then they flash back to the yuppie couple and they're like, well, you know, he just changed jobs. And so we're just waiting for things to get a little bit more. Yeah. And that was kind of us.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that bad, but we were like, we kept saying, we just bought the house. And,
right.
And, you know, and so we were just, well, we're just not quite ready. We're not ready. And that was the only thing that was right. And finally, I looked at my wife and I said, you know what? I don't think this is really a decision that you come to rationally.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if you want to have kids, you just say, fuck it. Let's have some kids.
Yeah.
And you just have some kids.
Yeah.
Because the minute that you start rationalizing it, you start coming up with reasons why it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, the political climate is a little sketchy right now.
Trump might become president. Yeah. So. Like,
do I want to have my children to be born in a world where Trump is president? You know, so it's.
Let's wait another 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of waited for a little while and we kind of went back and forth. Do we want to do this? Do we not want to do this? And then I was like, you know what? If we're going to do it, let's just do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sure is fun practicing. And so we went for it and it didn't work and it didn't work and it didn't work and it didn't work and it didn't work. And so then we enlisted some outside help. You know, we talked to, you know, different experts and went to the doctor and they gave Heidi Clomid.
Okay. I've heard of it.
Familiar with Clomid? Yep. So Clomid is a, you know, it's basically, it makes the woman produce multiple eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has a 5% chance of twins.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that's not true. I mean, if you look at like
500, I'm sorry, somebody scratched out the one and the zero before this. It's 105% chance.
This is an accounting error.
Yeah.
We fired Bob because he fucked up with the decimal point there. It turns out it's a 50% chance. So we did Clomid one time. And,
oh, wow.
And then Heidi was instantly pregnant, and which is cool. And, you know, we have science to thank for our children, mm-hmm. which I think is fun.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I like it. I would have grown them in a test tube if I had my druthers.
Yeah.
So
how long were you guys trying before you took the Clomid route?
Not that long.
Oh, okay.
We're kind of quitters.
Yeah. Well,
6 months.
I mean, maybe. You were at that point.
Not too long.
You were already, what, 37? Or 36?
30. Well, I was 35.
Okay. And Heidi is?
She's a year and a half younger than I am.
Okay. So.
Yeah. She's a year and 10 months younger than I am.
I mean, you're not really
she's
at
like
that
33.
Point, but you're getting closer to it and thinking if we're going to have more than one, not realizing the error that Bob made in accounting.
Freaking Bob.
That you are going to want to kind of make this happen. So I completely get that.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to have.
It needs to be hard, Tim. That's part of the process.
Oh.
Hey-o.
Hey-o. Dick Bob. Jokes. Somebody call Bob. So, I mean, we went through that with Delilah. I think we're about at a year. And it's frustrating as all get out because you don't want to do the finger pointing, but you're basically kind of in a way a little bit sort of doing it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And questioning in your mind, like,
what's wrong with
your
uterus,
woman? Did you have to get your sperm tested?
Oh, yeah. We did all the tests, and everything kept coming back normal.
Everybody's fine,
And I was like, are we just not having enough sex? We need to have – let's have more sex. That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, well, it needs to be – you know, the timing needs to be right. And now all of a sudden you're like, you know
– procreation sex.
Well, you're calendaring it.
Right.
You know, and it's so lame.
Yeah.
You know, and it just takes all the spontaneity out of it and everything. And I was like, you know, we're tracking, you know, sperm facilitating mucus and like all this crazy medical. Yeah. And I'm like, this is romantic.
Yeah. It's so frustrating. And you're like looking at the day, you're looking at the hour.
Yeah.
And was she like taking her temperature?
Oh, dude. Like the whole nine, you know? And so finally I was like, we were just we're in the doctor and the doctor's like, you guys are totally normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything's testing fine. You know, sperm count's good, blah, blah, blah. You know, you shouldn't be having any problems. It's just a timing thing. And I was like, all right, well, let's fucking kickstart the timing then.
Let's do it all the time.
Yeah.
Is what you're telling me, doc?
Yeah, like, right.
Let me slip you a 20.
So we did the Clomid, and then Heidi instantly got pregnant with twins, and so we're like 8 weeks in maybe, and we're at the OBGYN, and we're doing the ultrasound,
mm-hmm.
And the doctor's like, he's moving the thing around on the belly. And he's like, oh, look, there's a, you know, ooh, there's a heartbeat. It's very exciting. We're like, yay. And he's like, mm-hmm. ooh, oh, wait a minute. There's another heartbeat right there. And we're like, yay. And then he's like, oh, you know what? I think there might be a third one back there. And he's like, I don't see a heartbeat, but I think there's a third one.
No way.
And so you do this mental math in your head, right? Like, so, okay, so yay, first one. Woo, we finally did it. Yeah. Yay. And then the second one, you're like, wow. Okay. So then you're doing this in your head. All right. I'm picturing myself 3 years from now and both kids can walk. And we're at the park in front of a freeway. Mm-hmm. And one kid takes off that way and one kid takes off that way. And I'm like, I got that one. You get that one. Awesome. You throw that third one into the mix.
Yeah.
He says that third one. And I'm like, okay, I got that one. You got that one. And fucking good luck.
Yeah. We're going to need another wife.
Hope it works out for you.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, but no, there was not a third one. There was just the two.
So how long did that thought continue though? Was that shut couple down?
Weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A couple weeks. It was shut down pretty quick, but still it was a couple weeks of like, are we going to need to sell our house? We're going to need a bigger house. We're going to need full-time care.
Yeah.
What's a night nanny cost? You know, I mean, it's like, it's like cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And I mean, I think at the time, I'm trying to think of where I was working at the time. I think I was, I mean, I was working in sales, but I was working at, you know.
You were,
dude.
You were just out of culinary school.
Oh yeah, I was just out of college. I was not in sales. I was working in a restaurant.
Right, right, yeah.
I was working at Studio at the Montage, and making $10 an hour. And I'm like,
perfect.
Yeah, and
I'm gonna need a little raise. Right? I've got three kids coming.
Yeah. So that was sketchy. Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. I was making $10 an hour. And I mean, you know, the nice thing is when you're a cook, you make like, you know, you get like 60 hours of overtime a week. Mm-hmm. So it piles up. I think I was making like $140,000 a year making $10 an hour.
It's nice.
Not really, but
not the hours.
But yeah. So now it turns out it was only the two and yeah, that was an interesting, you know, and Heidi's a trooper.
Mm-hmm.
She was on her feet the whole pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
She looked like the front end of a submarine by the end of it. And it was hilarious because we'd go to the grocery store and like old ladies would like come up to her and go, oh my God, dear, you need to be laying down right now. You know, sir, you need to get your wife into bed. This child is coming any moment now. You know,
like, I think it just reached out and touched me.
It really did. I mean, they would seriously lose their shit. You know, I mean, they'd see my wife coming down the aisle and they'd be like, my God, woman, what are you, 12 months pregnant? You know? So that was always pretty funny, but yeah, I mean, literally like she went to work, she might've been working from home, but she literally worked the day the kids were born.
Oh, really?
She was at work and then, you know, the kids were running late. Twins.
She went over 9 months?
Well, so twins pregnancies.
Right. Are supposed
full
to be
term's
earlier.
38 weeks.
Okay. Okay.
So 38 weeks and Heidi's like not dilating. There's no kids coming. Oh, wow. So we made an appointment,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're going to go and be induced. And so we knew when it was going to be, you know, 2:00 on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, she worked that day and then we were like piled into the car and, you know, so she was still rolling around.
Wow.
Yeah, I think watching my wife go through that pregnancy, and I say this a lot, if men had to have babies, there wouldn't be any.
There would be no babies.
Yeah, we're panty waists
in comparison.
And I mean, you know.
You're not even just talking about the birth. The pregnancy.
Yeah.
Was Heidi, did she go through the ringer? Was she sick a lot?
No, not at all.
Oh, no. Well,
she had
good.
A little bit, but I mean, like she was a trooper.
Yeah. Did you just call her a super trooper?
I was about to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just clarify.
She was a super trooper.
So the birth really quickly did she deliver them naturally?
They were C-section.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So even with the induced, the kids were like, no, I'm not coming out.
Yeah.
Finn, that's my son. He was head down.
Ready to go, but
he had a massive noggin.
I do remember.
Yeah, it was huge. And Ellie was kind of like, she was like, I'm doing like kicking motions. Mm-hmm. She was like sitting above and like pushing him down. But he didn't want to go. And, they induced and then she got the epidural.
Right.
And then she was in labor for, you know, like 4, 5, maybe 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And the doctor was like, yo,
nothing's happening.
I got dinner plans tonight. Let's just get this done. And so we had a conversation, which is always hilarious because your wife's like, you know, she's got an epidural in her and she's like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And so we basically, we went for the C-section and, you know, 90 minutes later, the kids were born and that was crazy. And,
yeah.
That's wild for those of you
who have not yet experienced it.
Who are your listeners? I mean, like, are these, what do you think? Have you done like a demographic analysis? Are these like people who are about to have kids, just had kids?
I think the majority probably right now of what I have seen, and this is, so you people know, we are recording this the week of the official launch to iTunes. So it just hit iTunes 2 nights ago, I think. So I don't really have any demographics yet, but from the people that I've seen on like Facebook and whatever, a lot of them are current parents.
Okay. Okay. So, you guys know. You know, I mean, it's your kids were not born C-section, correct?
No, they were both
natural.
Both natural. One no drugs.
Yeah.
She did Sawyer without anything.
That's a terrible idea. Shouldn't do that.
That is
ladies
why,
have the drugs.
I don't know why. I really should high five her every single morning.
Talk to your doctor. Have the drugs. You know, there's no reason to go through all that pain. It doesn't even get to the kid, you know? I mean, just
I'll tell you the reason that she did it was because it didn't really have anything to do with the kid. It was her. Like, she got an epidural, it didn't work. She had to get a second one. Half of her, it was like she had a stroke. Like half of her face was drooping and she couldn't really tell where she was, how she was supposed to be pushing because she couldn't feel it at all. Yeah.
See, that's what I like.
That's the kind of weird thing. Well, yeah, but you also, like, you don't know if you're doing it right if you're not feeling it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, I hear you.
I'm talking like I'm some kind of expert, but
the
Sawyer, even though without the drugs was difficult, like, it was just so much faster.
Yeah.
Than Interesting. Delilah. So, okay. I don't know.
Well, I take it back. I mean, I would take the drugs.
I took an epidural before this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on one right now.
Yeah, it's perfect. Tim is actually hooked up. He's got an IV in his arm right now, and he's just carrying around a bag full of morphine.
I've got that big, long string needle straight into my spinal
You got to love it. But, I mean, that's a crazy operation. By the way. I mean,
what they do
to the woman is like terrifying, and you're in there.
Right.
And like halfway through the surgery, I'm like, Jesus Christ, I smell something burning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's you're only working on your wife.
Right.
You know, but then, and then all of a sudden they like hold up the kids. I have got crazy pictures of my kids, like fresh out of jazz hands.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're like jazz hands because they've just been exposed, like just been torn from the womb, you know, and they're like, what the fuck?
Right.
And it's just a gnarly operation.
It's a major surgery, and it is. And since Missy and I talked about it a few times, it's crazy to me that women still are like, "I want to schedule my C-section because I just don't want to. I don't want to do anything else."
Go through it. Yeah,
you are getting your stomach like
it's bad.
Everything cut into and
through the muscle.
Yeah,
it's gnarly.
The pain that you are going to be in is intense for weeks.
And so the first couple weeks after the kids were born, so we're in the hospital for 4 days afterwards, and the nurses are great because they wake you up every 30 minutes. So they don't like get any sleep.
Right.
And they're constantly talking at like full volume conversations right outside your door. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic. Love the nurses. No, I really do. Actually, they're pretty cool. But so the first 2 weeks after we get home from the hospital we're just punishing because Heidi basically, like, I got her up the stairs mm-hmm. and into bed, and it was basically was like, that. You have to stay here for the next 2 weeks.
Right.
Like, the doctor, like, takes me aside, and he's like, you know, your wife will die if you let her go down the stairs, wow. essentially, you wow. know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. And so I have twins, and I'm basically, like, rolling solo because my wife's on like gnarly painkillers and she's like stitched up at the gut and she can't really help much,
yeah.
you know? And so we were doing, you know, she was pumping and we're doing, you know, breast milk and then at night a little bit of formula mm-hmm. and I'm doing everything,
right.
You know, I'm doing all the diaper changes, I'm doing the feedings. And maybe you can tell me this because this has always been my impression. What was your level of involvement? Give me a number, like percentage wise, the first like 6 months of your kid's life, your first child.
So it was very high because Missy with both tore during the pregnancy. So she was mobile, but it was very iffy,
yeah.
Because she was, you didn't get to experience this, but she was basically making, I think, what they call the underwear burrito,
sounds great,
or a salami sandwich. It's like they give them this big kind of granny panties that are like mesh, and then you get tux pads,
okay,
and you have to like make it like a salami sandwich inside the crotch area,
oh.
and they have to put that on, and when they're taking it off, it's a bloody mess, and then you're having to, like, she was literally spraying, I can't remember what it is, but basically to numb the area as well. This is whenever she's having to go to the bathroom. So it was a nightmare for her. I'm making it sound like it was bad for me, but it was a nightmare for her, and she was, for the most part, really, really, like, not able to do a ton of stuff. So
right.
I was helping a lot. Delilah was a horrible eater, so she was having to use nipple shields. It was a nightmare for her. Yeah. It was just really tough. And then if we extend on, I don't remember how many months it was, but Missy went back to work, and I was working First American where I could still work from home.
Mm-hmm.
So I was being the stay-at-home dad mom.
Yeah.
So I was, for the first maybe 2 years of Delilah's life, I was at home with her every day.
Yeah.
And then Missy would come home and do whatever. So I was pretty heavily involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I liked.
And which I think is kind of from a lot of the other guys that I've talked to who had what we call in the twin world singletons is unusual. You know, I mean, a lot of the dude, I mean, like I talked to my brother, Mike, who's got two kids now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't even think he changed a diaper, you know.
That's funny because when you were talking just a little bit ago, I was going to say, and I wasn't going to say it out loud, but I'm going to, one of my brothers who will remain nameless, and I have four of them, so people can be confused on which one it was. But I remember many years ago, and he may have just been joking and thinking that it was kind of a funny thing to brag about, but I really think he might have been telling the truth when he said proudly years and years ago, I didn't change a diaper for almost 9 months.
Because, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you might not have to. If you have one kid and your wife, you know,
springs back and is okay.
And doesn't have a C-section and doesn't have to make the salami sandwich. And that's super disgusting. But
you're never going to look at my wife the same again. Especially.
I love your wife.
I'm going to make her always offer you a salami sandwich whenever you come over. I can just put it together really easy.
I'll just really quick. Do you want tux on that? But yeah, I mean, I feel like for the first several weeks, I did everything. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because my wife was like, you know, at a certain point, she finally got mobile again. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, and she was, you know, and then she was jumped in with, you know, fully. But she was like, you need to show me how to change the diaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, holy shit. Like my wife doesn't know how to change a diaper, you know, and I've been doing this. I can change two diapers in 30 seconds. I mean, like I was like It was such a habit, you know, and it was reached that point where it's, you get really good at something and then you just start achieving ridiculous levels of expertise,
right. You know,
and you're just like showing off.
Yeah.
And I'd be like flipping legs up into the air and throwing and powder and pop, 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 pop. And the kids are like, you know, fed, diapers changed, swaddled and back to bed in literally like 5 minutes. You know, I was just like, I was a machine. And so I had to walk my wife through the process, and here's how we do it, you know. And
it was that way with swaddling for me and us. Like swaddling is a art form.
If you're not swaddling, you should swaddle.
Yeah.
Like, it's seriously, if you're listening to this podcast, if you take one thing from this podcast, it should be that you should swaddle your kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, I used to swaddle my kids. Like, so I swear to God, for the first 10 months of their life, they probably thought they were burritos.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they always say. You need to make it so tight. And it doesn't, that was one of the things too that we learned about the onesies, because you feel like you're going to break their friggin' arms and shoulders when they're a week old and you're putting them in those little onesies and it's so tough because they're so tiny.
Yeah.
But they're like, it's okay. Like you're not going to break them doing this. And it's okay to swaddle your kid tightly. You're not going to hurt them. Right. And they like it.
They love it.
Yeah. So, I always feel badly, but kind of a small part in the back of my head when I see somebody swaddle a kid and their arm gets out.
Like,
I feel bad for them, but yeah, part of my head is like, that
dude,
you should have made it tighter up at the top. What are you doing?
What are you doing? Yeah. I got a great story for you. So, my kids are like 2 years old, and I was having lunch with a couple friends of mine, and my buddy, his wife had just had a baby. So they had this newborn, and we're at lunch, and the baby's like doing the just crying nonstop. And like, mom's looking frazzled and my buddy's looking frazzled. And I'm like, dude, what's, and I look over and the kid's just like, he's laying in his little carrier and there's just like a blanket laying on top of him. Like, and I'm like,
wow.
I'm like, yo, do you guys swaddle the baby? And they're like, what? And I'm like, you got to swaddle him. And they're like, what? And I'm like, let me see the kid. And I clear the table off. I set the kid on the table with the blanket. And I'm like, I wrap him up really tight. And I swaddle him. And I like pull, I'm like holding him down with one hand, pulling the blanket, stretching it, making it super tight, wrap him around. And I pick him up and then I shush him. Did you do the shushing?
Oh, yeah. Side on their side, shushing in the ear.
And dude, like literally in 30 seconds, that kid was asleep. And my buddy looks at me like, he's like, dude, you're a fucking wizard.
And you're hired.
Yeah. And I'm just like, bro, seriously.
Let me show you.
The swaddling is magic. Swaddling and shushing is magic.
Yeah.
That is the thing that gets you sleep.
We had that DVD and I think the book that was what? The seven S's?
Yeah, there was a lot of S's.
It was side, swaddle, shushing.
Yep. Spanking.
No.
Oh, smack.
Sword play. swashbuckling. I can't remember what the other ones were, but
there were some other S's that were less important.
Yeah. But the shushing, I mean, literally like it was telling you to shush them as loud as you possibly could.
Super
and
loud.
I would be like almost spitting in their ears because I was shushing so loud, but it would
work magic.
Yeah.
The kid's just like, because that's the noise that they hear for 9 months is your wife's blood flow.
Yeah. It's crazy. So your kids are now 9.
Yeah.
They're both healthy and happy.
They are. They're in fourth grade.
And you are still tired. With all these, because I know you guys found this magical twins group.
Yeah. The Mothers of Multiples Club.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Mom. Mothers of Multiples.
Mothers of Multiples.
Yeah, we found that early on, and it was funny because I think they told us about it when we were in the hospital. They probably had like a little flyer or something, and Heidi's like, I'm not really a joiner. Yeah, that was our life for the first 2 years
that
our kids were born. And we're no longer dues paying members of the Mothers and Multiples Club, but it's pretty cool because you meet a lot of parents who are kind of going through the same thing. It's cool because they put you in with kind of a group of parents whose kids are roughly the same age, and you're just around these parents who are kind of, you know, they live the same life that you do,
right?
You know, their hell is the same as your hell,
right?
And so it's pretty cool, and it was pretty funny too because there's a lot of multiples In the Saddleback Valley where we live.
Yeah.
And I probably would blame Clomid for that.
Yeah.
But there's only a 5% chance. But
that's what they say.
Yeah. But there's, I mean, there's tons. And I mean, we were in a group of probably like 60 sets of multiples.
Wow.
And so the interesting thing was, is that the first, I mean, once you get like past the 4 month point, you know, where your kids are, it literally, we had a birthday party in a park with cupcakes and shitty music every weekend.
Right. I'm sure.
For a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it was cool though, because, you know, the moms got to know each other. They had meetings, you know, they had Mother's Night out so they would get them, you know, kind of back to being normal human beings,
right,
which is important for moms. And then the dads, you know, I mean, we're dads, we're guys, we're just like, whatever, we just go with the flow and it's all good.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like, I'd show up at the birthday party every weekend and I'd do the head nod. What's up, man? You know, to the same guys.
Oh, you got twins? Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, exactly. Every weekend for a year, you know, and finally after like 8 months, one of the moms was like, you know what? You dads should get together and do a poker night or something. And we're like, yeah,
we should
do that. So we did, and we put that together, and there was like 8 of us, and you know, and I mean, I still keep in touch with like 5 of those guys, you know, and they're cool guys. And, you know, I mean, their kids are all, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. So roughly the same age. And so, you know, now we take the kids camping and, you know, and things like that together. So yeah, it was good. Yeah. If you have twins and you're listening to this, you should. Mothers of Multiples is nationwide. It's a national organization. Okay. They're everywhere and they're really cool. Recommend that. And yeah, it's, having twins is crazy. First year, crazy. I'm pretty sure I have, and you know, no disrespect, but like a version of sort of a wimpy version of PTSD,
you know,
because I literally have no recollection of the first like 8 months of my child's life.
Yeah.
All. It's just a black vortex. That
black is probably the right color for it.
I mean, I don't remember, you know, I mean, I've seen videos and I'm like, oh, look, there I am.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, like no recollection at all. Well, and it was funny because I was teaching. So I left the restaurant and I got a job teaching at a culinary school. And like the first couple months of my kid's life, I was during the day, I would watch the kids, and we have grandmothers who live close by. Mm-hmm. So my life was a little bit easier, I think. But then my wife would get home from work and then I would go to school and teach. And I can remember like sitting in front of the class and being like, you guys, I had 45 minutes of sleep in the last 3 nights.
You guys are just going to read.
Yep.
This is when Professor Green's going to just take a nap.
I'm going to do the demo. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to not cut my hand off. And then I'm going to go into the back of the room and I'm going to lean against the wall. I'm going to shut my eyes. I'm going to sleep for 4 hours. If something catches on fire, let me know. Otherwise, everybody passes. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, that was but yeah, I mean seriously, like the first year of the kid's life was crazy.
I'm sure. Were they on a similar schedule at all? Or
so, yes.
I remember you and I talked a lot about, like, when we were, you were probably the most Zen master for us, or for me at least, when we were getting ready to have Delilah, and you led me to some good books and whatever. And I know,
baby wise, dude. I mean, we started scheduling from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally the moment that my wife could like lift her head from her, you know, pain medicine induced fog, we put those kids on a schedule and we kept that schedule. I mean, dude, the trains ran on time, man. I mean, it was no matter what. Christmas Day, the whole family's at my parents' house and we're like, it's 4:30, we're leaving. And my mom's like, we haven't even had dinner yet. And I'm like, it's 4:30, we're leaving. You know, and it's so funny because grandmas don't get it.
Right.
They don't get it. They want to feed the kids, you know, fucking chocolate and sugar and orange juice and whatever, Tang. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. If I don't get these kids home in the next 45 minutes, my life for the next 4 days is going to be a living hell.
Yeah, yeah. And other people don't get, I remember when we used to be at Josh, not your brother, the other Josh's house. And there were people there who had kids, including my brother, Matt.
Yeah.
And they would say something like that. We got to go. The kids, we got to do this or whatever. And we would be like,
come on.
What is wrong? It's one day. Like, we're talking an hour, 2 hours. They're so lame. Like, we really used to talk some massive.
Until you had kids.
Yeah, yeah. Until it's we had kids. And one day. We should probably send apology letters to a lot of people. Like, we're so sorry. You don't realize this, but we talked about you a lot behind your back because of your precious schedule.
But dude, I mean, that's like the only thing. And I mean, by the time my kids were 4 months old, they both were on the same schedule. They woke up at the same time. They ate at the same time and they both slept through the night.
That's awesome.
You know? And I mean, that was all because we had an Excel spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we tracked everything.
Did you
track your kids' poops?
Oh yeah. Within the next year.
I'm
going to time travel and throw this
away. Crazy.
Do you have
a DeLorean?
I do. Within the last year, I threw away finally the notebook that Missy was like, they're not going to care to see that.
poop log.
I always thought it would be interesting because I had columns and I was handwriting.
Here's a sample of your meconium.
Yeah, it was. So I had the columns, which were, when they ate or when I think we did it more with Delilah. I don't think we did it with Sawyer. When she ate, when she pooped, when she slept.
Yep.
And there was something else on it too, when she was writing her novel, cause we really wanted to keep her up on that.
Here's the flashcard.
Yeah. I had a full notebook full of that, that we would always look back at. So I think this is pretty much a decent time I think we've covered fatherhood fairly well.
Cool.
All right. So, that is the words of wisdom of Jason Green, who has two kids, one male, one female. All right. Well, thanks for coming in for this episode. And I'm sure we are going to move. I'm trying to do a better cut because all my fork in the roads have sucked so far at the cutting of it. So we will say adieu to this episode and move on to our fork in the road. Yes. All right. You know way more languages than I do.
Yeah. So. I speak Swahili. Fluently.
Mm. So, all right. Thank you for listening to this episode with Jason. I will lead us out of this now and enjoy our fork in the road, which is coming up next.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. All right. I think I did a little better job coming out of this episode and getting ready for the fork in the road. I've been doing that pretty abruptly the last few conversations, so I apologize for that. I really wanted to focus on that with Jason, so there you have it. That's my better cut. So thanks to Jason for coming in. For those of you who do not go straight to the Fork in the Road episode from here, it may not even be available right now, but I will thank you all for listening to this episode. Pretty crazy story about Jason's childhood and all the things that he went through as way too young of an age. But I will say he definitely, regardless of how his mom handled it and how they handled it as a family unit, it has seemingly gone very well for him. And it, you know, doesn't seem like one of those things that created this large crack in his life's timeline. And he's done really well and been a very good guy. So thanks, Jason, for coming in. Thank you for listening. Again, you can find us on Daddy Unscripted on Twitter, Daddy Unscripted at Facebook, as well as daddyunscripted.com for the blog and episode website. Please go to iTunes, subscribe, leave a review. Those reviews are so helpful and so meaningful to me, especially in this early going to possibly get my podcast onto the new and noteworthy. So it just takes a little bit of time and we are going to do a giveaway. I keep saying we are. I feel like the podcast is a second entity, I guess. I am going to do a giveaway for you subscribers. So when you subscribe, let me know what your username is that you used. that you subscribed and left a review. And I will be doing a giveaway, potentially two separate giveaways, one to people that are not local to me and one to the people who are local to me here in Orange County or in Southern California. So stay tuned. We'll have more news on that. That is probably going to run all the way through to like the end of July before we start kind of looking at those results. So thanks again for all your support. I love it. And hoping this really goes far and continues on. Send an email. You can send it to any of those other places or to daddyunscripted@gmail.com. I want your input. I want to know how you're feeling about the podcast in general, as well as possible guests that you think I should try and get on the show, and some of those connections that possibly you can even make for me. I know one of you must know Matt Damon so that I can, and Bruce Willis, he's the other kind of big megastar I'd love to have on the show and talk about parenting and history and stuff like that. So I know one of you must be able to have the pull for that, right? So make that happen. And stay tuned for the next episode, which may very well be The Fork in the Road with Jason.